Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Tech Done Different Podcast with Ted Harrington. Do you follow the pack or challenge the status quo? Join Ted as he explores how to succeed by going against conventional wisdom. You'll hear leaders in technology and security tell stories about how they achieve their success by doing things differently. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tech Done Different. As always, I'm your host, Ted Harrington, and with me here today is my special guest, Lakshmi Hanspal, the Chief Security Officer of Box. Lakshmi, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Ted. Glad to be here.
So I'm pretty excited about the different things that we're gonna be talking about. And you have a really interesting and sort of diverse perspective because you wear many different hats in addition to being the Chief Security Officer at Box. And we'll get into those different things. But I wanted to talk about this idea that you mentioned when you and I were chatting the other day around the, well, as you phrased it, the art of cybersecurity. So I just love that framing and I love this idea. So can you tell our audience what it is that you mean by that, kind of what some of your thoughts are around this idea?
Right, absolutely. And this idea has evolved over several years, if not a decade, and through my own experience. So having been in this field for more than two decades, I have seen that when people think of cybersecurity, it's considered extremely technical. But over the course of my own experiences, I've come to believe that cybersecurity is more of an art rather than a science. And what that means is that it is, as in any art form, something that needs to be practiced. So there's learning, practicing, getting better, learning from pitfalls, applying it again differently or with different scenarios. I think that's important. So the reason I'm sharing this now is having come from a traditional STEM background, it wasn't until I entered higher leadership roles and began formulating hiring strategies that I realized that diverse teams solve the toughest challenges. So critical skills such as critical thinking, making understanding risks and making risks trade-offs. Understanding that cybersecurity is not a zero-sum game. These are all more fundamental to thriving in the security industry, whereas what normal graduates or anybody trying to enter this field get pitched is cybersecurity, ethical hacking 101, right? Ethical hacking in my mind is 401. It's a specialty, right? No one goes into med school saying, you know, med school, you know, neonatology 101. No, you get your MD, you get a pediatric degree, then you go into neonatology. So it's like, so that is what I'm calling as the art of cybersecurity. And that means that our curriculum, that the way we hire, the way we create experiences, the way we build our next gen pipeline, all that needs to think about what is fundamental to this art. And then what are the specialties that need to be layered on top of the fundamentals?
Yeah, there's so many interesting ideas within the idea that you just described. And I want to ask you about a few of them as we go. So the first thing I heard you talk about was that diverse teams can solve harder problems. And I don't think you said those exact words, but that was the gist of what you're getting at. So that's awesome and really powerful. So what is it that you think, how do we help teams build more diversity? I mean, certainly diversity is a challenge across security in particular, tech in general. I think everyone is at least starting to wake up to the importance of diversity. What can we do to better drive towards that if it is in fact helping us solve problems, more difficult problems, which I totally agree with?
Right, diverse teams solve the toughest challenges. And this is because of the experiences they bring. So the diversity lens that I'm putting here is on experiences that you bring to the table, skill sets, capabilities, past experiences, but also your appetite and hunger for learning, for current challenges, challenging status quo, and then building new futures, right? So those are all the lenses or ingredients of the diversity lens that I'm putting on. And so to create the teams with different experiences, with different backgrounds, with different skill set, different capabilities, one first needs to understand the current landscape, understand the state of the union, understand the capabilities you have within, and then you create strategies where you want to go hire different strengths. So manage around the, you know, the weaknesses of the current team. So you go hire different strengths. So I can give you an example. More and more cybersecurity domain is being driven by data, right? Not unlike any other domain, but more and more decision-making in terms of automation response or capabilities is being driven by data. So now we need, from when I started to where I am here right now, now we need more data science, data analysts, that kind of background in cybersecurity, whereas that was more of a particular niche domain in the past, right? I mean, they were being hired for other areas, not cybersecurity. So if you have diversity of data science, data analytics, economic background, understanding the economies of how you're investing and how you're getting return on investment, how you're creating strategies, I think that's a different diversity within the team. Diverse stacks where you worked on scale and stacks that are different, that is bringing in diversity within the team. And then just soft skills. You always find, and Ted, I think you'll notice this across your friends and across your family, there are risk-averse individuals, there are risk-tolerant individuals, there are risk-seeking individuals. I can tell you my daughter is on the risk-seeking side. She leaps before she looks. And so you need a combination of that within the team as well, right? And that's when you can have a debate on the, what I mentioned is the art of cybersecurity, which includes risk trade-offs. There is no zero risk game in any organization, in any business. So that means you need these diverse experience for that debate, discussion, and decision on what is the risk of doing something? Is that at an acceptable level? If not, what do we do to get it as an acceptable level?
I love it. And I like the way you're sort of drawing this distinction between specialties versus the foundational elements. And I definitely agree with you on that. And one of the questions that I'm commonly fielding, people are asking me all the time, are around people getting into the field. So that's either people who are in a related field, maybe they're in more of an IT field and they want to get into security, or they're in an undergraduate degree program, or maybe even high school. And they're always starting to ask questions that are different ways of asking the root question, which is, how should I start? Like, what are the things that I should go acquire, learn, et cetera? How would you answer that? Let's say it's, you know, let's go with the person who's an undergraduate student and they say, hey, I'm in a comp sci program. What should I be learning so I can start my security career? What's the first foundational element you point them to?
They are no different than what we would point a post undergrad or a graduate student to. They haven't acquired it is critical thinking, algorithmic and logic and pattern understanding. So these are more at the macro level courses, right? These don't have a particular stack in mind, language, a programming language in mind just yet. This is about how you think. And what is that signature approach that you would bring? The same problem can be solved a number of ways, but how would Ted solve it versus, you know, someone else within the team? I think that's important for earlier on for undergrads and anybody that's earlier in the career to think about two things. One is what is the sort of the hunger, the appetite, the domain that you want to gravitate? Because cybersecurity in itself is a large field. You can be on the operator side, you can be on the governance side, you can be on the risk side. You know, there's a physical security component to it, which ties into cyber, like we have within Box. You could be on the data, digital privacy or digital rights side. So the number of sort of domains. And so it's important to have a view of what are these one or two things that you want to deepen with it. And it's important to deepen rather than just going broad across many domains. And the second thing I would say is it's important to create your personal brand from earlier on? What is it that you bring to the table, right? Hey, I know you don't want to say you're risk seeking, but you say, you know, you're more than risk tolerant and you're able to look beyond the letter of the regulatory law or obligation in how a particular risk can be mitigated, right? So I think that's a particular skill that's needed more and more. And it's more of a practicing sort of soft skill, like any other, you know, art, like martial arts, the more you practice, the better you get. This is about a matter of practicing, getting comfortable, being uncomfortable. And as you expand those boundaries of comfort, right? As you get more uncomfortable, expanding those boundaries of comfort, you're also expanding the boundaries of trust in which you engage with individuals. So that means that they could say, hey, we have this sort of what we may call a risky situation. Let's go have a conversation with so-and-so, because they would see it from a viewpoint that perhaps we've not hashed out yet.
Yeah, that's really powerful stuff. We had a guest on the other day who used this metaphor that was similar to what you're describing about this. I love the way you said it, you know, this idea of get comfortable being uncomfortable. And this guest the other day, he said, it's kind of like when you're a kid and you're riding your bike and you wind up riding it a little too fast. And you're having that sensation of like, this doesn't feel very comfortable right now, but you're like, the only way through is through kind of thing. That's kind of what you're describing, right? Like in those moments where you're uncomfortable, that's where growth happens. Is that what you're saying?
That's where growth happens. That's where you feel that, you know, this appetite, this hunger you had is like, oh, this is what that feeling, you know, is, right? When that growth happens. One thing I would also say is network, network, network. You know, there are many pings that I get on LinkedIn. Just, you know, the question that you ask, how do I get started? For some people, it's certifications because it's more discipline. When you have to sit down for an exam for certification, there's prep work that goes with it. There's probably networking. You're probably doing a group study if it helps, all of that, right? Just for some people that works, right? Hey, I want to go get the certification. Because of that, I'm going to learn this. For others, it's more hands-on. Throw me in the deep end of the swimming pool. Perhaps give me a vest, but throw me in and I will find my way. Right? I will find my way with help, with support. And one thing I would say is that don't hold back on questions. Don't be shy about asking for help. This is not seen as a sign of vulnerability. In fact, it'll be seen as a sign of strength because it shows that you're comfortable getting uncomfortable again. And when you're getting uncomfortable, you're seeking for assistance, you're seeking for help, which will be in a way to go forth, to expand those boundaries of comfort, right? Because you're not going to stop there. So develop your personal brand, know one or two areas you want to deepen within. Don't like hop too fast. Like don't just be shallow in domains. It's okay to ask questions. It's okay to be seen, you know, show that vulnerable side and seek help. And network, 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 right? Find out, you know, you heard a talk, you heard a podcast, you heard a conversation and sort of something like lit up a light bulb, you know, moment came, an epiphany, and then just follow through with that, right? Hey, I heard you say this, what does this mean? Or how can I get that capability? How can I acquire that skill, right? I think networking is very important. And, you know, today's world is made it very easy for us to network and have equal access or equal outreach into individuals that we want to learn from.
Totally. I observed a really interesting thing happen the other day that was that echoes all of the themes that you just described, where I was in a fortunate position to go give a guest lecture to a computer science program. And it was a virtual one. And by the time when I was done, I basically said to all the students, I said, hey, look, however I can help you, let me do that, you know, reach out to me. And there were maybe 50 students in the class, two reached out to me and only one actually followed up that first thing, said like schedule it once we were going back and forth. That one person who reached out and actually scheduled a meeting, she was really just asking for advice. She was doing what you're saying, right? She's asking for networking. She was trying to ask questions. She was, of course, putting herself in sort of that uncomfortable position. Fast forward to like 3 weeks later, we hired her because we're like, this person exhibits the traits we're looking for. And she wasn't necessarily looking for me to hire her, but now we're so excited. She's part of the team. And so that's a real world example demonstrating exactly what you're talking about.
Absolutely. And that's what, you know, you never know where the road carries you. And demonstrating that initiative and demonstrating, I think there's a hunger to learn there is very important because, you know, part of the hiring strategy is where we see growth potentials, right? Where we see people bring in their unique signatures, but also growth potential right there. So one of the ways I think about this is if we start with our own self, right? So simple question, how do I stay protected with my engagement on the internet, whether it be gaming, dating, financial transactions, you know, anything that we're doing, research, anything, right? So you start with yourself, you start asking those questions, you're going to follow down some paths where you may or may not understand something. So you're going to learn from that, right? Then you're going to expand that circle beyond oneself to your family or friends. And you're going to say, hey, how secure are you, right? And you're going to impart some of what you've learned to them. And part of where I have seen the current generation learn through is not just throwing themselves the deep end of the pool, like hands-on learning or through certification. That is also by giving back. They say, listen, I want to give back to the community. I feel like I want to give back, you know, like a nonprofit. Now I sit on the board of directors of Cybercrime Support Network, CSN. This is a nonprofit organization that serves individuals and small businesses impacted by cybercrime. So Ted, if you can think about the pandemic and COVID, romance frauds have been at the, you know, the highest levels we have seen, and you know, other defrauding schemes that are going on. So this is about individuals, you know, losing thousands of dollars, but that's still under the threshold of how federal agencies would engage. Now, as an enterprise, you engage with federal agencies because you've probably lost millions, but what about you and I and our family and our grandparents and so on, right? It's still like, it's that trickle, right? They're, you know, you're trickling like thousands of dollars, but together they are, again, billions of dollars added together across a number of people. So CSN, for example, is a nonprofit that says, we'll help you understand what response means in this scenario. Who do you turn to, right? You have a 411, you have a 911, you don't have any 11 for a cybercrime yet, right? Is there a 211 you can dial? Not yet. But so part of where the learning comes from is think about, is there a giving back opportunity or are you thinking about giving back in the community? As part of doing that, you're going to learn not just for yourself, you're going to influence your friends, family, and then you're going to, you know, go on and have an opportunity like what you said, talk to someone and say, hey, I want to hire you. Are you interested?
I love it. It's such good wisdom for sure. And, you know, thank you for the way that you're getting involved with organizations like you've talked about. I mean, I agree with you that the idea of giving back, you know, security is, it's such a community. And it strikes me that sometimes it's not really treated as a community. Like we're always victim shaming when a particular company suffers a breach rather than like, you know, all circling the wagons around and saying like, hey, how can we all learn from this? What can we all do better? How can we help this organization? So, you know, kudos, hats off to you for the, what you're doing. I like the idea of 111 as the 911 emergency line for security incidents. That's a great idea. So let me pivot just a little bit. You know, we've talked about art of cybersecurity. We've talked about how do we approach building the talent pipeline, which is of course, you know, a problem in security. Let's talk about cloud. This is obviously something that a lot of organizations are continuing to go through their own cloud transformations. You're obviously someone deeply experienced in this space. So I guess the first place to start, the question would be, what is, in your mind, what does it mean to quote unquote secure cloud? Like what does that term mean, secure cloud?
So if we take one step back in answering the question, what does it mean to operate in the cloud? And then we tack on the what does it mean to secure the cloud? Operating in the cloud means that you're operating in a environment where the organization is does not have, you know, the full control. And I'm still going to quote unquote the control part of it because there's some illusion that we had control on our data centers, but not on the cloud. So you're in a hosting environment or a hosted environment in which your business transactions, your critical transactions are operating in. So that is what operating in the cloud means. Now, how do you tack on top of that security, privacy, compliance, digital rights, all of that that you need as obligatory and regulatory laws on top of cloud? Now, if you more broadly speaking, I would put this in the environment or the bracket category of trust in the cloud, because trust encompasses all what we're speaking about, right? It's in multi-dimensions for me, in the dimensions of services. It's across security, privacy, compliance, notification obligations, engagement with the customer, right? All of those. In the dimension of the stack, it's layer 4 to layer 7, right? All the way from the hosting stack to the application stack. And then in terms of the third dimension is in terms of the capabilities of the trust, it's earned. You know, when you talk to many different organizations, they'll say, we earn the trust of our customers every single day, and that's how we operate, right? It's never taken for granted. It's hard earned, but ephemeral. All it takes is, you know, something, and you know, to lose it very easily. So if we put it in the umbrella of trust, then what it takes to secure a cloud is A, to understand what those boundaries of trust look like within the cloud for between the customer and the provider, consumer and provider. Second, what is the shared responsibility between the consumer and provider again? So first is the due diligence and boundaries of trust. Secondly, the shared responsibility. And it is a shared responsibility. And anyone thinking that it rests on a single party has not understood that shared responsibility model. And the third, it is about, is this a partnership? And I have seen that partnership engagements, partnership relations between customers and their providers are the ones that thrive, that not just, you know, obtain, there are four phases, right? You obtain, maintain, sustain. That's what people do. You know, you obtain a service, you maintain it. Maintain is where you're trying to find out like ROI and cost and everything. And then sustain is saying, okay, I need to do this for the next 10, 20, X number of years. How do I automate? How do I create processes? How do I get line of sight? But there's a fourth phase beyond this, and it's called thrive. Because when you're thinking about, when you've done obtain, maintain, sustain, when you're thinking about thrive, you put it in overdrive in a different way. You're asking yourself different questions. You're saying, is this, am I operating this in a partnership way? And a partnership is very different. I can tell you there's one scenario where you can either play it in your head or in real life and say that if there's anything that happens, that things go south, a partnership relationship engagement is different from a transactional relationship engagement, right? Something happened to data. Partners operate in very different ways than transactional engagements or transactional relations. I think that's important. So do your due diligence on the boundaries of trust, understand your shared responsibilities, and aim and strive towards a partner relationship with whoever, you know, your service provider is.
I love it. Yeah, certainly agreed about everything you said, but the idea of partnership is such a powerful concept, right? That I said it before, you know, security is a community and security is a team sport, and how do all these different parts work together? And it actually, I still makes me scratch my head that people still today think the responsibility falls on one or the other. Like it's either entirely, you know, my job or it's entirely a cloud provider's job to ensure security. And what you're saying is it's a shared responsibility model. Yeah,
it is. Yeah. And what we're seeing over the last, you know, year and a half more broadly is that as we talk to customers and analysts, we're seeing companies today start to dust off from the pandemic, and they're shifting from crisis mode to strategic mode in their decision-making. And what does it mean? They're trying to find out and figure out what a mixed mode of working inside and outside the office is going to be. They're dealing with increasing demands to digitize their customer and partner experience, right? And with recent news on hacks and privacy challenges, they want to understand how do they manage their digital transformation when there's huge risk and vulnerability at stake, right? So all of this is the new normal, the new future of work, but it means that digital first experiences across every single interaction need to be secure, right? And the heart of all of this is what I would say when you ask me the question, what does it mean to have a secure cloud operation, is having services that are built in, not bolted on. And that is the heart of digital trust. So we spoke about trust, but digital trust is all of what we spoke about trust, but that's innate to the platform, innate to the offering. It's built in, not bolted on. So simply put, do you have a cloud environment? Do you have an operating environment where collaboration, content management, data security, everything that you're looking for, digital rights, digital privacy, all of that is available as part of the service itself, right? And that's important for customers to look at as well.
That's powerful stuff. So as we, our time comes to a close here, one last question that I'd like to ask you about our topic area to discuss is you're a wonderful role model for so many people in the field and who will someday want to themselves become a chief security officer. We've talked about how do we get more people into the field. We talked about diversity of viewpoints, et cetera. What's your advice for someone who wants to follow in your footsteps? Like, how did you get where you are? And what would you recommend to someone else who's trying to aspire to grow into a leader like you are someday?
And I want to preface that by saying that this is a journey. I'm in progress, and many leaders are in progress. And a leader that stays in progress, I think, continues to advance. So by thinking us or all of us as in progress, I would say two key things are important to think right away and include it as part of the, you know, thought leadership for individuals. And one is it's essential to take time to invest in yourself and invest in oneself. And this is by recognizing strengths and managing around weaknesses and finding and developing skills that complement existing skills and areas that require continued growth. So investing in yourself is not just, I'm not just talking about monetary investment. It could be that certification, could be that training course. It could be a particular degree that you want to go get. Yes, those are modes of investment, but investment also means finding those paths for networking, finding those paths for mentorship and sponsorship. Now, mentors guide you. Sponsors are the voices in the room for you when you're not in that room. So there's a clear distinction. So go find those mentors, go find those sponsors, invest in yourself across both monetary as well as the soft skill side. The second is, and we spoke about this a little bit, but I just want to emphasize, it's that important to create your personal brand that reflects your authentic you. In Box, we have a saying, bring your best dash to work, and that dash or that blank, you can fill it up. You can say, you know, I'm bringing my best comedic self to work today because it's just one of those days I need it, right? So I think it's important to bring or reflect on your authentic you and create that personal brand. And what this does is gives you the ability to set tone and sentiment with people who interact with you. And it creates a more productive relation or relationships. Mm-hmm. So brand, think about investing in yourself and just, you know, don't hold back, right? I think this is gender neutral equal opportunity environment. And many organizations operate cybersecurity in that way. So don't hold back, ask the questions, just, you know, continue to stay hungry.
Love it. Stay hungry. What a good and positive note to end on. So Lakshmi, thank you so much for spending some time with us here today. I think you will significantly improve the lives and professions of everyone listening. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ted. Appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. To learn more about Lakshmi or other guests that we've had, or to request to appear yourself, just head over to tedharrington.com/podcast, and we'll catch you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tech Done Different Podcast. with Ted Harrington. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.